We're holding on Kuf Samach Hei Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Kostuv Boy, suppose that a shtar says in it, Zuzin Meya, 100 Zuzin, de ilun Salin Esrin, which is 20 Sloim. Now there are four Zuz to the seller, so normally 100 Zuz should equal 25 seller. But here it says 100 Zuz, that Pliny borrowed from Pliny, 100 Zuz, which equals 20 seller. So then we say, ein lo the ein lo yela estrin, then the malveh is entitled to only 20 sloim. I is going to say, wait a second, 100 zuzim is 25 sloim, but we say literally that means the hand of the owner of the shtar is the lower one, meaning, in other words, listen, it's a matter of hamotzi mechaver olav araya. So it's a matter of a motzi mechaver olav araya. So you want to prove that you're entitled to 100 zuz, then you're going to have to prove that you're going to have to prove, such as with the edim who were there or whatever, that it really was. And without that, you can collect only the 20 zuz, which is going to equal only the 20 sloim, which is going to equal 80 sela. Vice versa, zuzin meyer de'in plus in silin. What about the other way around? If it says 100 zuz, which equals 30 sela, there you have the opposite. There you have the opposite thing where. What do you call it? Where now it's showing more. Same thing. Ein le ela mana, then he gets only a mana. He gets only the 100 zuz. Either way, in other words, lesser amount, because again, yad ba'al shtar. What about another case? Suppose the shtar says kesef zuzin de'inun. What if it says x? What if it says an amount of zuzin, silver or money of zuzin, which is. And then the words after de'inun was erased, so that we don't know how many zuzin we're talking about. So he's saying that he's saying I borrowed actually by I borrowed zuzin, which are, and he's going to be giving a figure of a certain number of zuzin, and now the next word is erased, and we don't know what that word was supposed to be. So then we say ein means not less than two. So we know there have to have been at least two zuzim over there. We don't know whether it's more than, we don't know, it might have been more than two zuzim, and therefore, but he's not going to be able to collect more than two. Similarly, similarly, if it said sloim, which are the nimchak, and it was erased, same thing, ein pochus mishtayim, then it means not less than two sloim. And similarly, darkonos. Similarly, if it was written in terms of darkonos, which is we find the mention in some of the later books of Tanakh, they were a large coin, a gold coin that was minted by some of the Persian kings. Some of the Rishonim explain it's equal to two sloim. Whatever the case, the same thing. It said darkonos de'inun v'nimchak, and then it was erased. Same thing, ein pochus mishtayim. Then it means that we're talking at least two. So in all those cases, now why do we have to repeat it so many times? I mean, once we have the concept, then it should apply across the board to all the different to all the different denominations. Different Mefoshim talk about different Mefoshim talk about different possibilities. The Tiferes Yisrael, in particular, says that. In the case of Zuzim, you would say that maybe he meant that a number of Zuzim which could then equal up to the next denomination. There are four zuzim to a seller, so maybe he actually meant four zuzim. So we're saying that no, it could be that it just said two and then it put it in terms of another denomination. When it says sloyim, you might think it means you have a concept we've learned about before about kesef tsuri and kesef medina. You have the pure silver sloyim, and then you have the ones that are 1/8 silver and 7/8 copper. Maybe he means those. So therefore, no, you can collect only two sloyim, not you can collect two standard sloyim, not just two cheaper ones. And in the case of darkonis, you would say it's a darkonis, a gold coins, and people don't usually pay with such gold coins. You would think maybe he means lesser quality darkonis. So that's one way of answering. Another answer from the Pnei Shloima is that in each case you would have thought maybe the loiva could claim that he owes only one and a half, because after all, obviously there's a plural over here. So yes, a plural is going to mean more than one, but it doesn't have to mean as much as two. Maybe it means that he's been entitled to one and a half, and therefore the Mishnah has to inform us that no, he is in fact entitled to collect two coins. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. What happens if the shtar says on the upper part of the shtar, it says a mona, which is 100 zuz, and then further down it says 200. Now we often have that in a shtar. Now we do have that we learned before about shita achrona. We learned about the last line of the shtar, which we don't learn anything from that because that's basically just meant to prevent alteration of the shtar, as we learned before. But here we're talking about, so you have something not in the last line, but in other places in the shtar. It's very common in a shtar that you repeat various details of the shtar. You may repeat the names of the malva and the loiva. You may repeat the amounts, different things like that. So here we have was a discrepancy between between an earlier mention and a later one. So now the question becomes then, so what do we go according to? We have in one place it says 100, and in the other place, and in the other place it says, and on the top it says 100, on the bottom it says 200, or the other way around, milamaila masayim, milamata mona. You have 200 further up and 100 further down. So then we say, then we always go according to what it says at the bottom. Because we say, maybe, for example, maybe the guy changed his mind midway through writing the shtar and decided to borrow less money, for example. So we always go according to what's further down. Well, if that's the case, then why bechlal, not just as far as the amount, but as far as all the other details, why are we bothering to write the top part, if anyway we're going to learn? Tosfos explains, in other words, the point of the question is, the Tosfos on this Mishnah are printed later on Kuf Samach Vav Amud Beis, but anyway, the point of the question is, that Mela, if you have to write everything twice, and then okay, you're going to say, listen, you know, Takonas Chachamim, you have to write everything twice, and that's that. But we don't specifically find a Takonas Chachamim to that effect. It's but here you have then, you know, it happens that they wrote this particular detail twice, and now there's a discrepancy. So what are we doing then? So why are we even bothering to write it twice? So why are we bothering in that case? If anyway, we're only learning from the tachton, and the answer is she'im timochek oisachas mina tachton. Because this way, if a letter from the bottom gets erased, yolamid mina elyon, then we'll be able to derive it. We'll be able to deduce it from what it said further up. In other words, like this, if there's an actual discrepancy where it was written one way in one place and the other in the other place, then we're saying maybe he changed his mind or something like that. But we're saying that when you have it, it probably was written the same way in both places, but just now we have it's erased in one place and we can't tell, then we're going to use what it said further up to reconstruct what it said on the bottom, and therefore, we'll do it that way. So that's the reason why we write it twice. So 1 second. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Tana Rabbanan. Omar Kesef, if the shtar says that he borrowed Kesef without saying how much. Now, the thing is, there are different, Kesef means money, but it means also silver. So it means, in other words, we're talking obviously about a certain amount of silver. The question is, what kind of silver coin are we talking about? Braisa says, ein pochus mi dinar Kesef, and it means it's not less than one silver dinar. It might conceivably be more than that, but again, yad ba'al ashtar al tachtoina. But the minimum that he's going to be able to collect is going to be at least one silver dinar, as the Gemara is going to explain soon why that is. Kesef dinarin, the dinarin kesef. What if it says that it's going to be silver of dinarin or dinarin of silver? So then we know. So now at least. So when it said kesef, just then it could mean only one dinar. When it says dinarin, then in plural, so it means en pachas mishtei. So then en pachas mishtei dinarin kesef, then it means at least two dinarin. Kesef bid dinarin. What about if he uses the expression in the shtar silver in dinarin? So that implies, in other words, something else. We don't just mean silver coins that are dinarin. What we mean then actually is en pachas mi bishnei dinarin to have. to have kesef. What we mean is, in other words, that it has to be 2 gold dinars worth of silver coins. In general, we have, there are 25, 24, 25, it talks about in different places, silver dinar to a gold dinar. So in this case, then, it means that, that he owes, because it said bid kesef, bid dinarin, then it means 2 gold dinars worth of silver coins. Okay, so now let's go through that braisa and explain it. Omar kesef ein pachas midinar kesef. You're saying that when he says kesef, then it means at least 1 dinar of silver. But how do you know that it means a dinar at all? The emanaska. Maybe it actually means a piece of silver and not even a coin. Tosfos discusses actually the question that, didn't we just say Yad Ba'al Ashar Al-Tachtona? Isn't a silver bar, Naska means a bar of silver, isn't that worth more than a dinner? So anyway, you would say that he has to get only a dinner because Yad Ba'al Ashar Al-Tachtona. So Tosfos discusses a couple of possibilities over here. One is that in fact we might conceivably be talking about a Naska that is smaller than a dinner. Besides that, anyway, the fact that it says a loshen that he owes him kesef, if he actually meant that he's just going to give him naska, that he's going to give him a bar of silver, then it would have been written with a different loshen. It would have been written something like it would have been written in a loshen that would suggest actually something like that, since it says kesef generically, then the Gemara is wondering that maybe it means, if he meant coins, he would have actually said something to that effect. If he doesn't say that, then that seems to imply that maybe it means a bar of silver of a certain standard size, even if that is worth more than a dinar. So how do we know that not? So the answer is Amar Rabbi Elazar dichtiv be matbeya. Fine, but the case is the shtar actually says the word matbeya, a coin in it. So we know we're talking about some kind of coin. All right, ve'ema priti. Maybe it means that he only owes him prutas of silver rather than dinarim, which are worth more. And the answer is Amar Rabbi Papa ba'astra de'le'sagi priti de'ka. Because we're talking about a place where they don't have prutas made out of silver. In general, prutas are made out of copper. So you could, there might conceivably be some places where they make prutas out of silver, but generally not. So we don't have to be concerned about that, because there's no silver prutas in this area. Okay. The Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. We learn in another braisa. Actually, Tosfos points out later on it may be part of the same braisa. to have. What if he says in the shtar, just gold without specifying how much gold that he owes him? So then ein pachas midinar zahav, then it means not less than a gold dinar, because that's the smallest gold coin generally used. Ein pachas midinar dahav. Dahav dinarin dahav, if he uses the expression gold dinarin or dinarin of gold, either way, ein pachas b'shnei dinarin dahav, then again the dinarin in plural means that it's two, so therefore it's at least 2 gold dinars. Dahav, by the way, is the Aramaic equivalent of Zahav in Hebrew. You often find that a Dalet in Aramaic equals a Zion in Hebrew. Anyways, Dahav Bidinrin, if it says in Dinrin, so when it was silver, we said it meant a certain number of silver coins equal to a gold dinar. So here it would be the other way around. Ein pachas mibishnei dinrin saf dahav. Then what it means is not less than two silver dinars worth of gold. So we're actually going to be talking about then a much smaller amount of gold then, because again, given there are 24, 25 silver dinar to the seller, so it means, in other words, he's saying that all he owes him is 1/12 of a gold dinar in that case. Again, let's analyze that. Omar to have in Tokos Medino Zahab. Again, a manaska, maybe the same question as before, that maybe gold means just a gold bar without a coin. Again, according to the various possibilities in Tosfos, either the very fact that he used the word to have without specifying what kind of gold we're talking about implies maybe we're talking about a gold bar, or that maybe we are indeed talking about a gold bar that's worth less than a small gold bar that's worth less than the gold dinner. Omar Abulazar, Dichasa Matbeya, we're talking about where it says in the thing, the word Matbeya, a coin, so therefore it's clear we're not talking about bars, we're talking about actual coins. Again, maybe it means prutus. And again, the answer is priti de davalai. After Inchi, people do not make gold prutus in the first place. Silver prutus, at least we had before, maybe people make, maybe not, but we're talking about a place where they're not used. Here we're talking about Bechlal. Nobody makes gold prutus. The Pashas, because when you think about it, a pruta is worth so little that a gold pruta would be a tiny little coin that would easily be lost, so nobody would bother. So therefore, we know it's not that. Okay. Next, we said in the Braisa, Zahav bidinuin and pachas mibishne dinuin kasef, Zahav. We said that if he says Zahav bidinuin, then that means at least two silver dinars worth of gold. The question is, the ema dava pricha, how do you know, Kamar? Maybe actually what you could understand it differently. Maybe it means pieces of gold dust, or pieces of broken gold or whatever, in the value of two gold dinarim. Why are you limiting him to two silver dinarim when Zahav bid dinarim could mean? You could still say, take the word dinarim to mean gold dinarim, and it means two gold dinarim worth of gold, except you don't have to give it to me in coins, you just have to give it to me in broken pieces of gold or whatever. Scrap gold. Abaya says, because again, Yad Baal Shtar Al HaTachtona, because again, the one who has the shtar has the lower hand. Hamotzim Chavel Baraya. You want to claim you're owed two gold dinarim worth of metal, then you're going to have to bring a proof for that. And if not, then you're getting only two silver dinarim worth. All right. The next two and a half lines of the Gemara are in parenthesis, because actually the Rashbam doesn't have those as his Girsa, and he has a different one. The Girsa in parenthesis is Resha de Katani Kesef Dinurin and Pachas Mishne Dinurin Zahav Kesef. In the Resha, then, when it said that if he says that he owes him silver in Dinurin, then we said it means at least two gold dinars worth. Amai, why would we say that? Ema Kaspa, Naska, betray Junior Kaspa Kamar. And again, the question would be, how do we know? Maybe it means a bar of silver worth two silver dinarim. But again, the Rashbam takes out those words in the Gemara, and instead he has the words that the Gemara says, Yehochi, if you're going to say so, if you're going to say that in the Sefer, we're talking about that we're limiting it to two silver coins worth of metal, rather than saying that it might mean two gold coins worth of metal. Well, then Reisha Nami, then in the Reisha, we should say the same thing and say that when he says Kesef Bedinarin, maybe it means only, why are we saying that there it means two gold dinarims worth of silver coins? Two silver dinarims worth of coins, whatever kind of coins it wants, or whatever kind of coins he wants, or even pieces of silver or whatever. And the answer is Amar Avashi Reisha Dekasev Dinri Sefer Dekasev Dinrin, because there's a difference over here. In the Braisa, in the Reisha, we're talking about where he used the word Dinri, which implies gold dinarim. Now both Dinri and Dinrin are plural. But nevertheless, there's a difference. Rav Ashi says dinri, or dinre, actually, I guess it would be with a tsere, refers to gold dinarim. Dinarin, with a nun at the end, refers to silver dinarim. So there's the difference. So when he says kesef the dinarin, then it's clear that he means gold coin, that it's clear it means X amount of silver that's going to be worth two gold dinarim. But in the Sefer, we're saying that he says gold in dinri. And therefore, so that would refer to silver dinarim rather than gold ones. Or the other way around, rather, where it says dinri, then it means gold coins, and when it says dinarin, it means silver coins. Rav Ashi is going to bring a proof for this from a Mishnah. A reason, Bapashtos, why it's that way might simply be because most of the time people dealt with silver dinarin. So you use a silver dinar, you use silver dinarin, and then you just use dinarin, the regular plural with a langanon. Dinre is really more a Lashon Smichus plural. We call it in Dikduk, something that's in the construct state. Just like, for example, in Lashon Kodesh, you have, for example, the word bias means a house, and then you have base something means the house of such and such. So the same way in Lashon Kodesh, dinrin would be dinners, dinre would be of. So pastors, people would use the word dinre without specifying the word zahav, but they would use it to mean gold dinners because of that idea, because you mean to imply the word zahav, as opposed to with silver dinner, and you wouldn't even bother because the standard meaning of a dinner is a silver coin. Okay. So the Gazan were not Tamer de Shiny Ben Dinur the Dinurin. Fine. Where do you see that there is that distinction that Dinuri means one kind of coin and Dinurin means the other kind? So the answer is Tanya. We learned a Braise. It's actually a Mishnah, so it should really be Tznan, really. So you have like this. The Mishnah says Ha'isha Shiyhoyu Aleh Chomish Ladis Suffolk Chomish Ladis Suffolk Chomish Zivers. Suppose a woman five times has miscarried, and we don't know whether what she was miscarried is considered a baby, Vahalacha, such that she would have to bring a korban afterwards. Or she has five times, she had a suffolk, whether she was a zava, same thing, either a yeledes or a zava, both of them have to bring korbanos afterwards. They go through a period of tum of atara, and then after that they have to bring korbanos in order to be able to enter the bis mikdash or eat korbanos. So suppose now she has five, and again, five doesn't mean dafka five, it just means some number of spakas like that. So the question is she going to have to bring how many korbanos is she going to have to bring? So the Mishnah says, Mevia korban echad, she can bring only one korban by chelas bizvachim, and at that point she can eat korbanos. The ena shara la chayva, the rest of them she's not required to bring. The Rashbam learns, in fact, that not only she's not required to bring them, but she shouldn't even bring them, because, like this, the korbanos that she's going to bring in these cases, in the case of a zava, it's always going to be two birds. In the case of a yeledes, if she's rich, it's going to be a sheep and a bird, and if she's poor, which most people were in those days, then it would be two birds. Either way, though, one of them is going to be a chatas. A chatas, you're not really supposed to bring on a suffolk. An oila, fine, you can bring whenever you want. But a chatas, you're really not supposed to bring for a suffolk. So the chachamim allowed in this case, look, you know, we have a suffolk over here. If she doesn't bring the chatas, she's never going to be able to enter the bis mikdash or eat korbanos again. So therefore, we'll allow her to bring one chatas ala suffolk. But to bring the rest of them, we don't really want to do that. That's how the Rashbam learns. Other Rishonim learn that it just means that other Rishonim just learn that it means that she doesn't have to bring them, but she could bring them if she wants. There are even actually gersois in the Rishonim that Vashar Ola Chayva, that the Mishnah is saying the rest of them are required for her to bring, just that right now she can start eating korbanos after bringing only one of them. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. What if instead of doubtful ones, what if it's certain ones? The Ena Shara Lechoyva that I was just talking about, the other gear says later on in the Gemara. So no, over here, everybody agrees that the Mishnah is saying so far that where it's a suffix, Ena Shara Lechoyva, the other ones are not a requirement, not her. Again, according to the Rashbam, that would mean we b'chlal don't even want her to bring the other ones because they are a matter of suffix, and we don't really want to do a korban and be suffix. We don't want to bring Chul and Lazar, possibly bring Chul and Lazara. And according to other Rishonim, fine, let her go ahead and bring them. If she wants to, she's just not required to. Anyway. What about chomesh leidus vadois, chomesh zivus vadois? But what if it wasn't doubtful ones? What if it was certain that she's given birth five times, or that she's had ziva five times and needs to bring korbanos? Then mevia korban echad vaychelas bizvachim. Again, she can bring only one korban. She can at that point eat korbanos, but vahashara leachoyva, the rest of them she's going to be required to bring later on. Because in general, you have that one korban in particular, for example, with one birth, the korbanos for one birth don't pater the next birth after that again, unless they were all within a certain amount of time, within a certain amount of days, one of the other. We're going to learn all about that in Masechta Nidah, Be'ez Hashem. Okay. In any case, so the Mishnah continues. Mice of Omdu Kinim B'Yerushalayim B'Dinrei Zahav. It happened once in Yerushalayim that pairs of birds, a pair of bird is called in halacha terminology, is called a kain, which literally means a nest. So people would sell birds in pairs like that, because most of the time when you bring korbanos of birds, you usually need to bring one chatas and one oila. So they would sell them in pairs. And Mishnayis Kinim, which we'll get to in a couple of years, Be'ez Hashem is going to deal with detail with all kinds of issues where there are mix-ups between them, where birds fly from one cane to another. You have all kinds of interesting possibilities over there. In any case, so here what happened was in Yerushalayim, the prices have gone up. But Omdu Kinim, Yerushalayim, Dinrei Zahav, a pair of birds like that that's to be brought as a korban, we're going for one gold dinar per pair, which is an enormous amount of money. People couldn't afford it. The whole point of bringing birds as a korban is that they should be cheap. Omer Reb Shimon Gamliel, who was the Nasi at the time, says, "Hamoin hazeh, I swear by this house, meaning the Beis Hamikdash, im olin halayla, if I will go to sleep tonight, ad shehiyu b'dinarin, until the price has gone down to dinarin, meaning silver coins. So here Ramashi is saying, you see from this that there was this difference between dinarei and dinarin, because you see over here that it started out by saying that they were dinarei zahav, and now we're saying dinarin. Tosfos though says, I mean, in that case, that's not much of a proof. The fact is, the Mishnah does use the word dinarei zahav. Of course, it means gold. Of course, it means gold coins. So Tosfos discusses different possibilities as far as one possibility is, in fact, that he says until they will be dinarin shel kesef, and then therefore that means making it clear, in other words, that dinarin refers to silver and dinarei refers to gold, because we would say that they were originally dinarei zahav and now they're going to be dinarin shel kesef. Okay. In any case, the point is that Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, I'm going to fix the situation up. How is he going to do that? He's going to reduce the demand. Economics 101, supply and demand. If you reduce the demand, then the price goes down. So therefore, he's going to arrange to reduce the demand for such korbanos, and therefore the prices will go down. Interesting to mention in this connection, the historian Josephus lived at this time at the end of the second Beis Hamikdash. He knew Rav Shimon Gamliel. He mentions him in one place in his writings, in his autobiography, and he describes him. He was very, very smart, and whenever there were things going wrong in public matters, he knew how to fix them up. So here we have in this Mishnah that we're quoting over here a perfect example of that. So what did he do? Nichnas the Beis Din v'limid. He went to the Beis Din and taught the following halacha, what we said before. Ha'isha shayu alei chomesh leidus v'adois, chomesh zivus v'adois. That if a woman has five, well, a slight, somewhat differently actually than what we learned, that if she has five definite births or five definite zivus, mevia korban echad v'achelas bezvachim, she can bring one korban. At that point, she can eat korbanos. Ve'ein hashar alei achoiva, and the rest of them are not achoiva on her. She does not have to bring the other ones later. Now, there's a few possibilities and a few girsois in this, because after all, we just said in the Mishnah before that she does have to bring the rest of them in the case of a Vaday. So Rashi in Krisus, which is where this Mishnah is, learns that actually it was an example of Eis Lasis Lashem. It's true the halacha is that she does have to bring them later on, but nevertheless, in this case, because of the emergency situation, to bring down the prices, then Rav Shimon Gamliel taught the halacha differently than what it is. On the other hand, Tosfos discusses over here that no, that's not it, that... the Rashbam actually says over here that he was following the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, by the way, at that time was already living, but he may not have even been learning Torah yet. When we say the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, we mean the opinion that later on we find in the name of Rabbi Akiva. But in any case, that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel would have held that way. That he learns that he disagrees with the Mishnah we said before, and in fact says Eina Shara Le'achoyva. Tosfos also discusses there are different Gersois over here, whether he's saying the rest of them she does have to bring or not, but nevertheless, the point is that he publicized the halacha. One way of understanding is until then, the Chachamim did not want to publicize this halacha that she doesn't have to bring the rest of them before she eats korbanos, because they wanted people should bring korbanos. But now, under the emergency situation, what Rav Shimon Gamliel did, according to that explanation, is he said that at least as a temporary measure, that she doesn't have to bring them in order that she can eat korbanos after bringing only one of them. And maybe even he made it as a takana for all times. There's different understandings among Rishonim on the subject. But the point is, in other words, that brought down the demand tremendously, because until then, everybody thought that you have to bring all of them. And now he's saying you have to bring only some of them. Or maybe fine. Maybe according to the Girsay, you have to bring all of them. You can bring them only later. You don't have to be in a rush to bring them now in order to eat korbanos. In any case, what happened was the result of that. That very day, the price of kinim, the price of these pairs of birds, dropped to rivasayim. Rashbam explains rivasayim means a quarter of a dinner. So, and we mean a silver dinner. So, in other words, before we're saying again that the price had been one gold dinner. Now it dropped to one quarter of a silver dinner. So it went down to 1% of what it had been before, because the demand had gone down so much based on the halacha that Rav Shimon Gamliel had just taught. Tosfos discusses also that the Girsa Riv Osayim over here suggests a plural, so that would mean two quarters. So Tosfos discusses maybe the word is supposed to be Riv Osim, which therefore would mean a quarter. It would mean quarters, as in other words, each person who's buying a pair of birds is paying one quarter of a dinner for it, but not two quarters, because that. But then Tosfos discusses other possibilities. Maybe it means Rashi, he brings from Rashi and Chrysos
that it means two pairs of birds for two quarters. Because again, when you have these women, they're going to have to bring these korbanos eventually. They're going to buy two pairs of birds at a time, let's say. So then in that case, then the word rivosayim would work. Whatever the case, so first of all, we see from the story what the measures that Rav Shimon Gamliel did in order to make it work, that people should be able to bring their korbanos and not be price gouged for it. And I mean, you know, first of all, on the one hand, there was a takana for it, pashut, you know, ashod yiddish gelt, that you don't want Jews to have to waste their money. But another concern was b'chlal, you know, if they can't afford the birds in the first place, they may end up being over. They may end up going into the Bais Mikdash or eating korbanos without bringing the korbanos at all, because they're going to say, listen, I can't afford it, and that's going to be a problem. So for all those reasons, is why he made this takana. Again, whether it was a one-time thing, just for the emergency, or whether it was a takana that he made for the future, based on that he held like Rabbi Akiva, as the Rashbam says, there are different opinions among the Rishonim about that. An interesting point from that we learned actually, there's an Achron called the Tzemach Tzedek. We call him the Tzemach Tzedek HaKadmai. Now we have the Tzemach Tzedek, the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, but before him, 100-odd years before him, there was an earlier Achron, also called the Tzemach Tzedek, also because his name was Rebbe Nachum Mendel. He wrote an important sefer of Shailos HaTshuvos, which is often quoted by later Achronim. So later on, once the Lubavitcher Tzemach Tzedek came along, then they started calling the original one Tzemach Tzedek HaKadmai, the earlier Tzemach Tzedek. In any case, he writes in one of his Trubas, you have a situation where the Goyim are selling fish and they're jacking up the prices so people can't afford fish for Shabbos. Then the Tzemach Tzedek says, on the same basis that Abonim should make a takana temporarily, then that you don't buy fish for Shabbos until the Goyim are willing to lower their price. I guess the same thing would apply with Jewish sellers, but I guess back then it was more the Goyim who tended to have the monopoly on selling fish. Whatever the case, point is, and this is brought in the Alter Rebbe, brings it in Shulchan Aruch. So we see, in other words, there is this concept that when prices are too high for a mitzvah, then the Chachamim should take whatever steps are necessary to lower the prices, even if, for example, in the case of the fish, it means a lack of Oneg Shabbos, and in the case of the Korbanos, at least according to Rashi and Chrysos, it means that he's actually temporarily changing the Halacha in order because of the emergency situation, because Eis Lasset Lashem. In any case, again, the reason why the Gemara brought this whole point in is Rav Ashi demonstrates, you see from this story, that din rei and din rin are two different things. Din rei means din rei in the smichus state means dinarim of something, and therefore that means the word gold is implied. And din rin without that just means a standard kind of dinarim that most people use, which are silver dinarim. The Gemara goes on. The Mishnah had said, "Kosev milamayla." Hold on, we have the case where one part of the shtar says, says 100, and the other one says 200. So we said that we always go according to the lower one, because again, we say maybe he changed his mind or something. Except that we said if a letter is missing, if a letter was erased in the bottom part, then we can reconstruct it based on the top part. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Yilamed atachtim mina elyon ba'ois achas. When it comes to reconstructing what you have on the bottom from the top, you can only do that when it's a discrepancy of one letter. Avaloi b'shtei osius, but not when it comes to two letters. Now, the Rashbam learns we're talking about over here actually where there's a discrepancy as far as the name, that we have a different name earlier in the shtar than later, the name of the malvo or the loivo or whatever. And the Rashbam learns what we're talking about is actually where the sofer wrote the name differently in the two places. He wrote the name missing a letter in one place. So then we can say that even as the Gemara is going to give an example over here with the names that are different by one letter, then we can learn, then we can reconstruct the bottom one from the top one. Avaloi b'shtei osius, but not if the sofer missed out two letters, as the Gemara is going to explain why. That's according to the Rashbam. Tosfos learns we're not talking about missing out letters, we're talking about letters that were erased, as in the Mishnah. So we're talking about, in other words, that, again, you have something on the bottom where it seems it said something, and now it's rubbed out, and we can't tell what it says. Then if it's one letter, we can reconstruct it from the top one, but not more than that. So kagoin chonon mechanoni v'onon me'anoni. For example, suppose you have, the shtar earlier on says that chanoni borrowed money from somebody, and further down on the shtar, it says chonon, without the yod. So then we can say that it means that there was supposed to be a yud there and it's missing, either according to the Rashbam, the sofer forgot to write it, or according to Tosfos, it got rubbed out. But onon me anoni, or similarly, for example, you have the word anoni earlier in the shtar, and later it says onon, same thing. Mefarshim, by the way, bring up the point that Hanani and Anani would be spelt with a regular nun because the nun is in the middle of the word, and Hanan and Anan would be spelt with a langer nun. So wouldn't you be able to tell based on that anyway? So there's different possibilities that they bring up. Maybe, in fact, back then they weren't always careful to distinguish between the regular letters and the end of letters. Maybe they would use the end of letter, the regular letters, even at the end of the word. So there's different problems. Maybe in a Sefer Torah it would make it possible, but in a Shtar it wouldn't matter so much. So maybe there is that. And then, for the Drisha says on tour that you're right. We don't actually mean Chonon and we don't mean Chanoni and Anoni and Chonon and Anon. We're just giving those as examples of letters that are of words of names that are different by one letter. But yeah, what we really mean is letters ones where you don't have that consideration. The Shach actually, when he discusses it in Shulchan Aruch, he says. And no, maybe what it means is, in other words, if we're saying when we can and we can't do that, so fine, it would mean maybe he wrote it carelessly, maybe not. So it would mean, in other words, fine, in that case, we can't allow Hanoni to connect it to collect the debt, let's say, but we can't allow Anoni, we can't allow Chonon to collect it either, because maybe it was supposed to say Chonon, or maybe it was supposed to say Hanoni, whatever. In any case. So the Gemara asks, "My shnosh de osiyas deloy." Now, why are you telling me that you can't do that? You can't fill in two missing letters from the bottom part, deloy, and you can't do that. Duma misrami shem ben arba osiyas, because after all, you might have conceivably the original name might be four letters, like Anoni or Chanoni. V'habale palga d'shma, and you're going to say we're going to try to reconstruct half of the name. We don't want to do that. If that's the case, then in that case, why are we allowing us to reconstruct one letter? What if the original name was two letters? What if the name was Don or God or something like that? And one missing letter is half the name. Again, one missing letter is half the name. So why should we allow one letter? Ella, no. What we mean is shtei osias hainu taima. The reason is because the reason why we're concerned if there are two letters missing is the reason is because that you might have the original name was three letters, and if you're going to fill in two letters that aren't there, whether because they weren't written according to the Rashbam or because they were erased according to Tosfos, then you're going to be reconstructing most of the name, and we don't want to do that. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is to reconstruct half the name, fine, that we can do. So therefore, always, there's no names in Lashon Kodesh that are only one letter. So no problem, you can reconstruct one letter. Maximum you're going to have, it's going to be half the name. The guy's name was God, and the Dalet is missing, for example, so you're reconstructing one letter out of two, that's not so bad. But to reconstruct two letters, where it might conceivably be two out of three, that we don't want to allow, and because of that is why we say in general that two letters we can't do, no matter how long the original name was. So the Gemara continues. I'm going to papa. Pshitali. Now, it's obvious to me the following din. What if we have a different kind of discrepancy in the shtar? Seifel milamayla v'keifel milamata. What if further up in the shtar, it says the word seifel, and then later on, again, in parts of the shtar that are repeated further on, in the nusach of it, again, not in the last line, as we learned before, but earlier in the text of the shtar, instead of the word seifel, it says the word keifel. Now, the Rashbam learns that say the reason why we're using those of obviously is because they're very similar words. They're different only in one letter, and that one letter itself looks very similar in writing, as we'll talk about soon. So the Rashbam learns it means exactly what it sounds like. Seifel means a basin. Heifel literally means folded, so it means clothes that are folded. So it would mean, in other words, so the Shtar says, for example, that Reuven was mafkid, where the Reuven deposited for safekeeping by Shimon, a seifel, and then later on it says that he deposited by him a keifel, or the other way around. Then the Rashbam brings that some people explain that it's a gematria, and then the Rashbam says on it, vehevel, who, that's nonsense. No, we're mentioning seifel and keifel, not because the same din wouldn't apply as far as other kalim, but again, just because the two words are very similar. Tosfos, though, actually brings from Rabbeinu Tam something similar to that explanation that the Rashbam rejects, not so much a gematria, but rather an acronym, that Seifel stands for Samach Palgi, meaning 60 halves. So they would often talk about, sometimes they would talk about currency in terms of halves, like you might talk about a half a dinner or a half a sella or something like that. So then he's writing 60 halves, Samach Palgi, short, that's Seifel for short, and later on it says Keifel, which would stand for Kuf Palgi, 100 halves. Then Tosfos brings another explanation That seifel stands for sa'ah palga, meaning one sa'ah palga, a sa'ah and a half, and kefa would stand for kavu palga, a kav and a half. In any case, this is not just a question, by the way, of what the words actually mean. It also makes a difference as far as the understanding of the next piece of the Gemara about when you have one versus the other. So Rav Papa says, obviously, if it's a seifel up above and kefel down below, then there's no question we're going to go according to what it says further down, like it says in the Mishnah, that we always go according to the lower one, unless it's erased, and then we reconstruct it from the earlier one. But Rav Papa's question is, kefel milamayla versus seifel milamata. What about the other way around? If it says kefel further up and it's a seifel further down. Now, again, you would say, what's the problem? You just go according to the lower one. But the question is, it's possible, of course, that he changed his mind in the middle of writing the shtab, but it's not very likely, Rishonim explained. So therefore, we would rather say there might be a different reason for the discrepancy. And where there is, then the question is, my mi chayshin lezvur oloi. Do we consider the possibility that there might have been a fly involved? A fly might have landed on the ink while it was wet and altered the form of the letter. Meaning, in other words, in this case, we're saying when it says seifel, then what that would mean is, for example, that the fly may have rubbed out part of the kuf that was sticking below the line. You have like this, a kuf, after all, has a leg that sticks below that sticks out below the line, like we were talking about the other day, as far as the body of the letter and then the ascenders and descenders. So the kuf has a descender. So maybe a fly came by and rubbed off the part of the kuf that sticks down. Some Rishonim use the interesting expression. They say that the fly would drink the ink. I guess you could imagine. I mean, the ink is made out of it. It contains water and it contains other things in it. Maybe a thirsty fly might take a drink from it, or whatever. It might rub its feet on it, whatever. It might cause part of the kuf to be rubbed out, and therefore now it resembles a samach. So would we consider that? Or do we not say that? We just go according to the tachton and have done with it. And the Gemara says, "Teiku, we can't be sure, and therefore amotzi mechaber alavaraya." Some interesting things in that regard are, Mephoshim discussed the question, do we mean, first of all, what might the fly do? Would it only remove parts of letters, or could it conceivably also add parts to letters? For example, is there the possibility that maybe it would take a kuf and move the ink a little bit and make it that what was supposed to be a kuf with spaces between the two parts of it now resembles a samach? Or do we not say that? Are we saying strictly that the fly might only remove parts of the letter but not add to it? That's one point they make. Another interesting point in that connection is bichlal. I mean, a kuf, it's precisely a kuf has openings in it, a samach doesn't. So how would one look like the other anyway? So one consideration, the Tashbit says that in shtaris, the same way as we were just saying, in shtaris, they're maybe not always so careful with the difference between a regular letter, between a regular form of a letter and the end of form, like, for example, regular nun and langer nun. Maybe the same thing with kuf. They weren't always so careful to put it with spaces, and they might write the kuf as if it was one big thing all connected together. Even if not, again, you might have that consideration. Maybe the fly could move around the ink and close up those spaces. But an interesting point about that's brought in the Sefer Baruch Sha'amar, a classic Sefer from one of the Rishonim on the Halachas of Safaris, is you see from that, therefore, that a kuf should be mostly closed up. You see that the right side of the kuf has to be curved inward so that it comes close to the other leg. And the hanging leg, the disconnected leg, should be tilted towards the other one, so that it very much does resemble a samach, just with a little bit of space around it. Because that way, then you have the possibility that it's mentioning over here about a fly doing something to it and altering the shape of the letter. Although it is interesting, actually, because in the Alter Rebbe's Ksav, at least the version of the Alter Rebbe's Ksav that seems to be circulating nowadays, it doesn't seem that leg of the kuf is bent, tilted inward. It seems to be basically straight. What the Alter Rebbe does with that statement from the Baruch Sha'amar, which is actually in the name of Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, I'm not actually sure about that. So the Gemara goes on. One time there was a shtar that said in it 600 and a zuz. So the question is, what do you mean? What the 600 what?
So Rav Shrevya sent a message to Abaya, sent a shtar to Abaya to ask, what do we understand it as? Shismeya istiri vizuza. Does it mean 600 istiri, which is at plus one zuz, and istira is another word for a sela, which would be therefore, so it would be and each sela is worth 25 zuz, plus one zuz. I do a shismeya priti vizuza, or maybe it would mean 600 prutas plus one zuz. So obviously that's going to make an enormous difference in terms of how much and in terms of how much he's going to have to pay. Omale, Sabaya tells him, Dal priti, you know what? Never mind the possibility of prutas. Do like kasvi b'shtara. Nobody would write 600 prutas in a shtar. Dasuki maskan lahu. They would sum them up. Every 192 prutas equals a dinner, so they would divide up 600 by 192, and they would write however many dinarim that comes to, plus however many loose prutas. So there's no question that he didn't mean that he didn't mean 600 prutas plus one zuz. The Rashbam, by the way, points out, I forgot to mention in the previous one about seifel and kefel, that Rashbam points out when he say tekuah moitzim mechavel avaraya, we say momen amutal b'safik chokin. Sometimes we say when we have a doubt about something, then they divide it up. But that's the Rashbam says. That's when we have a suffix about what happened. Shor shenoga chasapara, and you find the baby over there, and you don't know which one, whether the baby was miscarried before or after the attack. We had at the end of Bava Metzia the case. We had the case actually earlier in our Masechta in the previous perek, where a son and a mother were in a house together that collapsed, and we don't know which one died first. So then the yachloiku. But in this case over here, the yonim don't know how to paskin, so therefore send them hamotz mechavel avaraya, as in the case of seifel and kefel. Okay, so again, getting back to this matter of the 600 and the one zuz, Sabai says it's impossible that it would mean 600 prutas plus one zuz, because you wouldn't write 600 prutas. You would just combine them together into dinarim. So Abaya continues, umash v'lehu zuzi. So what he would do again is he would combine together into zuzim. He would do every 192 protas equals a zuz. My amrit, so what are you going to say? Shismeya istiri v'zuzah. He might mean 600 istira plus one zuz, or he might mean shismeya zuzi v'chad zuzah, or he might conceivably mean 600 zuz plus one zuz, so in other words, 601 zuz. Well, fine. Yad ba'al shtar al tachtona. In that case, we follow the usual rule that whoever has the shtar has the lower hand. Amotzim chaver l'raya. So therefore, we're not going to allow him to collect the larger amount, only the smaller amount. The Rashbam and Tosfos both bring over here an explanation from Abenu Chananel that. That we're talking about over here would be ones that are each worth half a zuz. So in that case, then it would come out then the 600 istiri and a zuz would come out then to 300 istira, but it would come out to 300 zuz plus one. But then the Rashbam says that no, an istira, like we said before, is a sela, each one of which is worth four dinar. So therefore, he would actually be receiving zuzing. Tosfos also points out, in that case, if we're always going to say that you combine smaller denominations into larger ones, then why don't we say also that the zuzi also might have been combined into larger numbers? And the answer is because it's common enough to write zuzim in shtaris, even though there are larger coins. Same way, for example, as we often have the expression in the Gemara, four zuzim, as like the minimum wage that a person might get, and we don't call it one sela, even though four zuz is equal to one sela. But when it comes to prutas, we don't do that. People combine prutas into larger amounts. And again, Tosfos also brings what Rabbeinu Chananel wants to say about it, that an istira is less than a zuz. And again, Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. It doesn't fit with the words of the Gemara, and so therefore they explain it like the Rashbam, that the istira is larger than the zuz, and therefore it means that we're going to say therefore he doesn't get
600 is Sudi and a Zuzah, and a Zuz. Instead, he got 600 Zuz, and he got 600 Zuz plus one Zuz, because that would be, we would say again, Yad Baal HaShtar HaTachtona. And if he wants to get the larger amount, then he has to demonstrate that that he's actually owed it.
Okay. Ayah Shekoyach.